Welcome back to His Time. I'm Andy Bates. It is that time of the week we get to check in with our friends over at 1517, The Legacy Project. Joining us by phone today, Dr. Adam Francisco. He's professor of history and political thought at Concordia University, Irvine, and a contributor to 1517legacy.com. Dr. Francisco, thanks so much for being our guest this morning. Glad to have you on the line.
Yeah, it's good to be with you.
And Dr. Francisco, tell us a little bit about your work at Concordia University, Irvine, and as a professor of history and political thought.
Well, we're a small but a growing liberal arts college.
Mm-hmm.
And as is the case with a lot of professors at small liberal arts colleges, you teach very broadly. So I teach a number of courses. We have a core curriculum, a really great core curriculum, that forces all of our students to take 8 particular classes, 2 of which are history classes, in their freshman and sophomore year. So I get to teach a lot of those. It's basically ancient history up to and through the Reformation all the way to the present day over the course of 2 semesters. I teach a number of upper-level classes, too, from medieval history to Islamic civilization. And on occasion, I teach a course in the Arabic language.
Wow. Well, I really appreciate your education and scholarly work when it comes to Islam and helping us, those who aren't so familiar with it, helping relate that to us in a way that that the layperson can understand. I enjoyed the previous conversations I've had with you on other programs and talking about that. Being so close, in somewhat close proximity to the recent issues in San Bernardino, are you familiar with what's happened there, or what are your thoughts on the situation?
Yeah, well, I think San Bernardino County is, I don't know, I want to say it's a little over 50 miles away. I remember last week when the news broke that there was an active shooter, and I don't watch TV, not because I'm pious or anything, I'm just too cheap to purchase cable television, but I was watching the news break online, and I remember early in the morning, or early in the day, when the news broke about this active shooter and some of the bits and pieces of it came out, it seemed very coordinated, not like your run-of-the-mill, if there is such a thing, active shooter. And I said to my friends here, I said, I can't say this. I'm not supposed to say this per the rules of political correctness, but I just wonder if this might be a terrorist attack. A couple hours later, it was confirmed. Doesn't mean I'm a prophet or smart by any stretch of the imagination. Just it just smelled of a terrorist attack, and we're learning that there's a connection, perhaps even a connection, actually, I don't think it's perhaps, but there is a connection to ISIS, certainly a connection to the global, if you will, jihadist network of some sort. So I get little bits and pieces as more evidence comes to light, but it seems that as they're now starting to follow the money, they've learned that not too long ago, Saeed Farouk and Tashfeen Malik had, I want to say, close to $30,000, I think it was $28,000, deposited into their account, and I think they're tracing that source. But it seems that what happened in Paris, I guess several weeks ago now, has now hit America on a smaller scale, but for those who are in counterterrorism research, the history of modern Islamist or jihadist movements. In many ways, this wasn't predictable precisely, to be sure, but it had to happen here, and now it has.
Hmm. I think there's one thing about this, at least it appears to me, that's unique about this. I've never heard in previous stories that a female would serve in such a way that a female would make that sacrifice in that way.
Yeah, well, they're a minority in the jihadist mm-hmm. movement, to be sure. In terms of actually operating or being operators in these terrorist operations, But they are. They certainly are supporters. There's a tremendous amount of female supporters of it. I mean, the wives are oftentimes complicit in these activities. But now you have actually women operating, like Tashfeen. And if I'm not mistaken, I think there was a woman involved in the Paris attack as well. I wonder if we'll start to see more female participation in it, because that seems to be the trajectory. Who knows what will happen in the future. It is kind of interesting. It maybe suggests that the jihadist movement is getting, I don't know if they're getting desperate or more democratic, but it is an interesting trend, to be sure.
It's going progressive, huh?
Yeah. Women's rights in Islam, I guess, are being realized now. Jihadist movement. That's probably an off-color joke. But
how do you address these topics in your writing or in your classroom?
Whew, it's tough. One of the peculiar things here at Concordia is that we have a sizable, maybe even a growing, and I don't mean this in an alarmist way, just descriptive way, Muslim population on our campus. Many from foreign countries like Saudi Arabia, and a number of the Muslim students take my classes, and sometimes it's a great gift. For example, in Arabic, I've had Saudi students in that class. I don't know why they're taking a class in basic Arabic, but they are a gift in that they help with explaining the culture, and they have special insight into some of the linguistic aspects of the language. My Islamic civilization class, however, it's just this week, we've now, after 15 weeks, finally reached the 20th century, or 20th and 21st century, and we've looked at the what we might call the progressivist or modernist movement in Islam, and now we're looking at the Islamist or the jihadist movement in Islam, and it can get a bit uncomfortable, especially when you start tracing the networks and highlighting that many of the radicals in the 20th century that were kicked out of places like Egypt and Syria and Jordan, they were welcomed with open arms in Saudi Arabia. And where they make contact with Osama bin Laden and so on. And pointing out that, you got to point that out because it's just part of the story, it's a matter of fact, but it can be a bit uncomfortable when you've got Saudi students in front of you. I do always try to emphasize throughout the class, perhaps I overemphasize it. I feel as if sometimes I'm overemphasizing it. I emphasize that this, again, or that there are a spectrum of beliefs within the Islamic tradition. There are those who are real hardcore, super traditionalists and literalists when it comes to their interpretation of the Quran, who have a very aggressive, totalitarian, and perhaps even dangerous worldview. At the same time, there's a good majority of the Muslim world that is largely not necessarily Muslim in name only, but they're Muslim culturally, and they certainly, their loyalties are to Islam, but they're largely unfamiliar with some of the more violent or extremist traditions that have, at least from our perspective, dominated Islamic history.
It really is quite fascinating, the history alone and the things that you've shared with me in the past. What are some of the significant things from Islamic history that are significant and that have really shaped what we see today in terms of these jihadist groups and terrorism now coming to the United States?
Boy, there are a lot of things. If I had to choose just one, for 1,400 years, in Islamic legal discourse and in terms of what we might call its discourse on foreign policy, Muslim jurists and theologians have always seen the world as if it comprises two particular realms. There's the realm of Islam, Darul Islam, which is the territory that has a majority Muslim population, More importantly, in terms of its definition or its being included in the domain of Islam, is it has an Islamic government and Islamic law, the Sharia, is in place. And that territory is conceived of as the domain or the abode or the sphere of Islam. And in Islamic law, from the 7th century or 8th century at the latest, up until the present, territory, geopolitical space outside of the domain of Islam is usually referred to as Darul Harb, or the domain of war, or perhaps the domain of jihad. And the idea is, at least in the classic Islamic worldview, is that the domain of Islam is to expand as it finds the opportunity into the domain of war, whether it be through, in the old days, through imperialism, or in present day, through immigration. But just dividing the world up into those two abodes, I think in many ways explains, or at least helps explain, how at least the Islamists, the real traditionalists, view non-Muslim countries. And this isn't just me saying this. There are Muslim scholars out there who acknowledge that this is fueling some of the animosity that Muslims have for the non-Muslim world, and also fueling terrorism. For example, Tariq Ramadan, probably one of the more popular Muslim personalities in the Western world. He's sometimes even referred to as the Martin Luther of Islam. In a book called Western Muslims and the Future of Islam, written or published around 2007, he says, he acknowledges that this is the way Muslims still see the world. He argues that that needs to be altered, but he's acknowledging that that's the basic framework or lens through which most Muslims conceive of the non-Muslim world as the domain of war.
Well, we are all out of time, Dr. Francisco, but I thank you for your thoughts on these issues, and want to point our listeners to some of your writing. They can find at 1517project.com. It's a helpful website, and you can find Dr. Francisco in the list of contributors there. Thanks so much for your time, and I know that in a matter of days, you'll be embarking on a new venture called Sabbatical. God's blessings on your sabbatical.
Thank you very much.